Okay, yesterday I said that we were going to continue chapter 21 of the Exodus, where we're going through the law. Yesterday we spent all of our time on the first 11 verses talking about slavery and women's rights and all that stuff. And that's an important conversation to have. But I'm going to try to move a little bit more hurriedly here through the text. So go ahead and reread if you don't mind Exodus chapter 12, Exodus chapter 21 rather, verses 12 through 26. And we're gonna get through this, and hopefully we're gonna get through verses 28 through 36 as well. So why don't you go ahead and read the rest of chapter 21, and we'll see if we can't knock these two out of the park here really quickly. Okay, so we're here, and the law gives us these laws about personal injuries, and it says if somebody strikes somebody so that they die, that person must be put to death. But if he does not do it with premeditation, but it happens by accident, then he says that there's going to be a place, the cities of refuge, where manslaughterers can go. But here's the point: if you strike somebody, if you punch somebody, if you're in a fist fight and you punch somebody and you punch them so hard that they die, that's murder, because you intended to harm them. Now, whether you intended to murder them or not is not the issue, but you chose to use your fist and your fist killed that person. That's homicide. Okay, that is murder. Now, it might be considered manslaughter in our laws, but God says no. Like, if you use your fist, you use a tool, you use some way to kill somebody, whether you intended to kill them or not, if you intended to harm them, then that's murder. Okay? It says, whoever strikes his father or mother must surely be put to death. God's pretty plain about that. Like, you don't strike your father or mother. You need to respect and honor father and mother. Kidnapping. You're put to death for kidnapping. Anybody who disgraces his father or mother must be put to death. And then verse 18, we see, if men fight and one strikes somebody with a stone or a fist and he doesn't die, but must remain in bed, and then if he gets up and walks around on his staff, then the one who struck him is innocent, except he must pay for the person's loss of time. So what we see in verses 18 and 19 is this idea of tort, is tort law. So if you get in a fight, if there's some kind of struggle and somebody is injured and they're laid up in bed, then you need to pay for their lost time. You need to pay for that. And that's reasonable. I don't think anybody would read this and say that this is unreasonable. Okay, if a man strikes a male servant or a female servant with a staff so that he or she dies, he will surely be punished. However, if the injured servant survives after one or two days, he will not be punished, for he has suffered the loss, is what we get. Now, this is where the text gets really interesting. So he has suffered the loss. And the NET has an interesting note. It says, I'm just going to read this note here. It says, the last clause is a free paraphrase of the Hebrew. For he is his money, is the literal translation, or his property. It seems as if the slave survives for a couple days. It is probable that his master was punishing him and not intending to kill him. If he then dies, there's no penalty other than that his owner loses the slave who is his property, and he suffers the loss. Now, this is one of the more disturbing parts of the Bible, where it says, because he is his property. This tends towards calling other human beings chattels. That's kind of, like, discomforting, but here's the point. The point is that murdering, like hitting your slaves and beating your slaves is something that needs to be dealt with. Like, you can't just kill your slaves, right? We read, and now the it doesn't say for sure that he needs to be put to death. It says, if a man strikes his male servant or his female servant with a staff so that he or she dies as a result of the blow, he will surely be punished. The word is avenged. So the question is the man being avenged, is this a euphemistic way of saying he will be put to death? Is this, you know, kind of the Bible sometimes does this. It says, he'll be put to death, he'll be put to death, he'll be put to death. And then we don't have he'll be put to death, but it'll say something like, he'll be avenged. Is that a euphemistic way of saying he will be put to death? Or is that saying that there's a variety of punishments? Because nothing is laid out here. Verse 22, if a man hits a woman and the child is born prematurely, there's no serious injury, then the one who hit her will surely be punished in accordance with what the woman's husband demands, and whatever the court allows is what the NIV says. Whatever the court allows, the NET says decides. But if there's a serious injury, then you'll give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, burn, bruise for bruise. If anything, if the child comes out with any birth defect, then whatever happens badly to the baby, that happens to the person who hits the pregnant woman, okay? If she has to be give birth prematurely. That's an evidence that her being injured in the scuffle or kerfuffle was causal of the birth defects. See, God is giving wise laws here, right? Okay, if a man strikes his male or female servant so that he destroys the eye, the servant gets to go free as compensation for the eye. If he knocks out a tooth, the servant will go free as compensation for the tooth. So if knocking out, especially, by the way, teeth, especially in a time before dentures, like losing a tooth is a pretty significant loss. You know, losing an eye is a very significant loss. Okay, so if you get freedom for losing an eye or a tooth, not that those are like small losses, but if losing part of your body because of a master's abuse is sufficient to give you your freedom, then obviously I don't think that slave masters who murdered their servants were just allowed to go free. That's not what God's law is intending. Okay, so what are we seeing here? Okay, what we're seeing here is that, again, remember yesterday I said that the Bible is not pretending to be the perfect law. The Bible is recognizing human frailty. Obviously, beating servants is probably not a great thing. Obviously, being a servant and like disobeying your master to the point where you deserve getting beaten probably isn't a good thing either, right? But here's the point. God recognizes that fights happen. God recognizes that violence happens. But God is giving laws to say, like, look, there's no law that says if two men get in a fight with each other that they need to be punished. God doesn't say that. You want to sort things out with your fists? I think it's rather stupid. But God doesn't call a punishment for that. Now, God calls for a punishment for attacking somebody. But if two men get in a fight together, then the fights happen. Fist fights happen. Okay? But you need to show restraint. And what God is saying is you need to show restraint when you use physical force against somebody. When you're using physical force, you need to show restraint because you will be responsible for what you do with your physical strength, okay? Negligence is a sin, and that's what the text here is very clear about. The text is saying if you are negligent with your use of force, you are responsible for the results of that force. That's important. And there's obviously spiritual implications for this. Negligence is not an excuse for sin. Negligence is not an excuse for sin. You cannot sin and do so negligently or ignorantly and believe that somehow absolves you from your moral responsibility. Like, negligence does not remove culpability, okay? It is still, you are still responsible. And the same thing we see as we continue in verses 28 and following. It says, if an ox gores or a bull gores a woman or a man so that either of them dies, the ox must surely be stoned and the flesh must not be eaten, but the owner of the ox will be acquitted. But if the ox or if the bull was in the habit of goring and its owner was warned, but he didn't take the necessary precautions, and then it kills a man or woman, the ox must be stoned and the man must be put to death. If a ransom is set for him, then he must pay the redemption for his life according to whatever amount was set for him. If the bull gores a son or a daughter, the owner will be dealt with according to this rule. If it gores a male or female servant, the owner must pay 30 shekels of silver and the ox must be stoned. Okay, so again, and I'm just gonna paraphrase here the next little section here. What the Bible is telling us is you are responsible. Now, if you're living in a world, now I used to help people raise cattle. I spent a lot of time working with cattle, and I had some friends who got a pretty decent sized cattle operation. I used to help them dehorn and castrate and stuff like that. And one of my friends had a pretty big steer. It wasn't a bull, but it was a pretty big steer with some decent horns. And that thing was a wild thing. I mean, it was all Angus. It was completely wild. It was violent. It was aggressive. And I went and helped them. And I mean, I remember this thing was about to break through the gates. It was a mean steer. And we had to deal with it. Now here's a question. If I went and dealt with that animal, if I helped him deal with this and I got hurt, that's on me because I willingly went in. But let's say that we're living in a time when animals like that aren't always penned up. They just kind of wander around. And he knew that was a wild steer. We thought that maybe one of the testicles got missed when they were castrating it, and that's why it was acting kind of bullish. So if he's just letting this thing wander around, and the thing we know that this thing goes after people, and he does nothing to keep it penned up, to keep it from hurting people, then he's responsible for that. And he should be responsible. And if it kills somebody, then he should be put to death for that. Now, if the ox gores somebody, then he needs to be dealt with. If it gores a male or a female servant, it doesn't necessarily die. But if the male or female servant is injured, then they have to be compensated. And the bull has to be put to death. God is saying over and over and over again here, he's saying over and over and over again that you are responsible for what you do. You are responsible, not just for what you do, but for what you permit. Negligence is not an excuse. Negligence is not an excuse. You are responsible. Now let's go ahead and let's take a brief pause because we got a few minutes left. In these last couple minutes, we're going to go through the at least the beginning of chapter 22, the laws about property. So go ahead and pause this audio. Go ahead and read chapter 22, and then we're going to dive into chapter 22. Okay. All right, so you've paused it. We're here in chapter 22, and what do we see here? We see if a man steals an ox or a sheep and sells it, he has to pay back 5 to 1 and 4 to 1 for sheep. If a thief is caught breaking in and he's struck, there will be no blood guilt for him. If the sun rises on him, then there's blood guilt. Does that mean that if a thief comes in with a sword and you kill the thief with the sword, that you're responsible for blood guilt because it was dawn? No, it means that if a person is unarmed and they've broken in to steal, and you kill them in the night, you don't have an adequate knowledge of whether that person is armed and intending to do you harm. But if the thief breaks into your house and it's clear that they don't have a weapon and you kill them and you can see them, that's murder, right? Like, it's not saying that if, you know, somebody breaks into your house with a dagger and is going after your wife and you kill them, that you're responsible if it happens after the sun is up. That's not what the text is telling us. Remember, this is casuistic law. And this is case law. These are not saying that every single instance or every single specific is being given in each of these laws. What it's giving us is a general principle of what kinds of laws there are. And what he's saying is, if a person breaks into your house in broad daylight and they are not armed and they are not intending to do you harm, they're just trying to steal your stuff and you kill them, you're a murderer. Like, you cannot take somebody's life for taking, you know, a string of pearls that's in your wife's, you know, jewelry box. But if that guy's brandishing a weapon, then he's a clear and present danger to you. And yes, you're allowed to use lethal force, right? So we can't read these overly literally. We have to recognize that these are case laws that are giving us general principles that we need to apply by using our brains, okay? So continuing on. If a man lets animals loose in livestock, then he has to make restitution for whatever is damaged. If a fire breaks out and it destroys the grain, then the person who started the fire has to take care of it. And then we have a law here about protecting things for safekeeping. If somebody's taking care of somebody else's property, if he's vouchsafing to protect his property, that he bears some, not a lot, but he bears some responsibility for what happens. If a man borrows an animal from his neighbor and it's hurt or dies, then the man who owned it will surely pay. But if the owner was with it, he won't have to pay. Why? Because if the owner's with the animal, like if you're using somebody's ox, like let's say I go and rent somebody's van, okay? I rent somebody's van and the van breaks down while I'm with it, then I need to pay for that van, right? Like at least, you know, that's one way to think about it. If however the owner is with me and I can prove that I wasn't abusing the van, like I'm not just abusing it because he's the one driving it, because that's the idea. If the owner is driving the oxen, like let's say a friend of mine has, you know, this really strong set of oxen, this yoke of oxen that can plow really fast, and I hire my friend to do it, I rent them out, he's the one driving them. So if one of them gets worked to death, that's on him. That's not on me. I'm not responsible for that. What are all these texts teaching us about? Okay, so if we go through and we look through these two pericopes about fighting, about animals, about bulls that gore, and then we look at these laws about property, and we could continue too. We can look through and notice what we have here in the moral and ceremonial laws about seducing a virgin, about having sexual relations with animals, about having sorcerers and sorceresses, and being unkind to widows and orphans. I'm just kind of summarizing here what's left here. Lending money to people who are needy, about blaspheming God, about holding back offerings. We see that these laws continue. Looking at the beginning of chapter 23, don't give false reports. Don't just follow a crowd and doing evil things. If you see your friend's animals wandering off, go get them, bring them back to him. Don't turn away justice to the poor. Don't ignore poor people in the law courts. Don't accept bribes. Don't oppress resident foreigners. Okay, we see these laws here. And I'm going to stop here. I'm not going to go into the laws about the Sabbaths and the feasts and the angel of the presence because those laws we're going to talk about tomorrow. But what do we see in these laws? What is the common denominator? The common denominator is that I am responsible to you and you are responsible to me. We are responsible for the way we treat each other. We are responsible for our behavior, both the behavior that we intend and the behavior that, that just happens through negligence. I am responsible to you. That big question that Cain asks, he said, am I my brother's keeper? Am I my brother's keeper? Yeah, you are. You are responsible for your brother. You're responsible at least for the way that you treat him. Now, does that mean that you bear responsibility for what your brother does? No, but you're responsible for what you do to your brother and what you permit to happen to your brother. You, all of us are responsible. All of us, to some degree, are our brother's keepers. We are our sister's keepers in the sense that we are responsible for what we do to them, whether we intend to do it or whether we allow it to happen negligently. We are responsible to each other. This question of what we owe to one another, this is a question that the Bible is dealing with in great detail. And God is trying to tell us that we are responsible. We owe each other honesty. We owe each other care. We owe each other compassion. We owe each other justice. We owe each other justice. That's what the book of the law is getting about. That's what the law of Moses is getting about. We owe each other justice. Anyways, that's all the time we have for this morning. Tomorrow, we're going to jump back in and we're going to finish up chapter 23 of the law. Tomorrow, we're going to finish up chapter 23 of the law. Thank you. I'm glad that you were able to join us today, and I look forward to sharing some more Bible with you tomorrow. Thank you. God bless. Bye.